Oregon, Boise State, the season opener for both teams, Saturday afternoon at Autzen Stadium. How do we see this game playing out? We're going to make the call.
All right, welcome into the Autzen Audibles podcast pregame preview edition of the show. And Eric, we're live. We're live on YouTube as well. We're going to let the stream go out a little bit, see if people join in. But yeah, it's a new season for Oregon football. It's going to be a new season for us here at Autzen Audibles. We're going to do some different things this year. We've changed up kind of the format of the show a little bit. We've added some production value to it as well. So to get you up to speed, Mondays will continue to be our Monday mailbag. And then we'll have a Wednesday show like we always do, where we bring on, hopefully every week, a guest of the opponent that Oregon is playing. Thursday is this preview show. The change here is, instead of just publishing it cold, we're gonna go live. We're gonna do it live.
We're going live.
So we're gonna go live on Thursday, and then on Saturday, instead of racing home after the game is over to get our podcast up, we're gonna do it live again from Autzen Stadium, or when you go to Stillwater to cover Oregon at Oklahoma State, or when I go to USC. One of us will be in the press box. If it's a road game, if it's a home game, we'll do it live directly from Autzen Stadium and really try to engage the live stream here. So if you're in the chat, drop in a chat and really make that part of the show as well. So it's an exciting year, right? There's a lot of hype. There's a lot of expectations. There's a lot of eyeballs on this football team. We're going to cover it from the start to the finish here at DuckTerritory.com and on the Autzen Audibles podcast. And I guess I should remind folks that if you're looking for a way to help the show, the easiest path, we've got a promo right now, and it's just for listeners of this podcast, whether you're listening on YouTube or whether you're listening you're listening on your podcast form, whatever you want to go, wherever you find us, go and put in a promo Duck60. That gets you 60% off an annual membership at DuckTerritory.com. That's the easiest, most impactful way to help this show grow and to help continue this show to operate in the way that we are doing it. So, all right, game week, season over. It's here. It feels like we've talked about this forever, of the excitement, the expectations, what we're looking for out of the program. It's now here on Saturday, 12:30 on CBS. I still get the little goosebumps when the CBS big crew is here and the game of the week. You see the TV trucks. I drove by Autzen Stadium earlier this week heading to practice. The CBS production trucks are there, and I got a little bit of goosebumps just because we grew up, right? Every game of the week, the biggest game every year was on CBS. You know, we grew up with that broadcast crew. Charles Davis will be making his debut for CBS. They're all here. The number one TV crew for CBS, the big game of the week, is here in town, and it's still cool to see. It's still fun, excited to see the jolt that comes with it. Boise State comes 12:30. I guess kickoff is officially at 12:40 p.m. Pacific time. You and I will be there. We're finally here, Eric. We're finally here.
It's exciting. And one thing on the Charles Davis, I will have – Matt had earlier, I think last week, an interview that he did with Charles at Media Day. I've got something that will be, I think, posting later today on Thursday, looking more at this matchup, a little more focused on Oregon. And one of the cool things was I didn't realize this. I know he'd been doing the NFL broadcast for a while. This is his first time back at Autzen since 2014. And wow. that kind of blew my mind, but he was really, you know, conveyed excitement about just being back in the college game and especially starting out here. This is his debut as the CBS lead analyst for a game. So I think that's going to be cool. So yeah, keep an eye out if you're interested in kind of reading up on Charles Davis's thoughts going into this. I'll have something up on the site here some point later today. I'm guessing sometime early afternoon.
And much like the 2024 season when Oregon played Boise State, and that game came down to, remember, a game-winning field goal as time expired from Atticus Sappington, and Oregon moved forward. And found a way to avoid a upset win at home. And I think the theme this week with Oregon's players, their coaches, Dan Lanning called Boise State an identity program. Dante Moore said this week, we learned from that game, we don't want to get punched in the mouth. We have to, you know, treat every rep, every snap, every day in practice leading up to it serious. This team has the full attention that they can give to an opponent, despite the spread being 24.5. And it's stayed there basically all week. There's been zero movement on that. The odds makers expect this game to not even be close. And yet Oregon is treating it much like a big-time matchup in the Big Ten, knowing Boise State's reputation. You know, what their old nickname is the BCS Killers, right? The BCS is long gone, but how many notches on their belt do they have? They've done it to Oregon twice, three times, and they've done it in Eugene. They've knocked off the Ducks. So a different program, different era for sure for both programs. But Oregon knows Boise State's not coming in feared. They know they're not coming in afraid of the matchup. And this is one in which there's going to be a lot of eyeballs just on how well Oregon plays out of the jump, because how good we all think they should be.
Yeah, no, this is a unique start to a season, by the way, because usually you open with, I guess, unless you're Dan Lanning's first year where you start with the reigning national champion, Georgia, your former school. Typically, there's a bit of a ramp up and you've got your Montana States, or this year like that. Typically, like that Portland State game feels like it should be leading the season, not Boise State, who is one of the better group of five teams, the favorite to win the new Pac-12 conference, which still kind of blows my mind that we're talking about a new Pac-12 conference, but they're the favorites to win that. And I think have a real chance to be a playoff caliber team, or at least the team that comes from the group of five as that selection. So, you know, this is not a layup to start the season. We'll get to predictions later. I think both of us feel pretty confident where Oregon is at entering this one. But at the same time, like you outlined there, Matt, like Boise State's 3-1 in this series historically. This is a three-time defending conference champion from the Mountain West entering the Pac-12 where they're the favorites. This is like a really proud program where when we had BJ Raines from Bronco News Nation on, I guess, a Wednesday show, you know, he was talking about how there was kind of some chatter in Boise about, man, 24.5, like they don't really think Boise is going to be on the same level as Oregon. That maybe surprised, maybe ruffled some feathers in that part of the country. So, you know, I'm kind of curious to see, Matt, like right out of the gate, we're going to have a real sense of where Oregon's at. Like, you know, sometimes when you open a season, like they did a year ago against Montana State or Idaho State the year before that. And although Idaho wasn't a very good measuring stick, given how that played out. It was a closer game, but you know, you're going to have a real sense of where Oregon stacks up and how legitimate they are, I think, coming out of this one. That's not to say it's a test that they're going to face in some of the Big Ten games. USC at the end of the month is certainly going to be more challenging. Probably make a case Oklahoma State has better athletes, and that could be more challenging the following week. Obviously, we know what awaits in November, but this is going to be a real game to kind of either validate or maybe for some invalidate preseason expectations. You know, Oregon, you know, number two in the AP poll, number two in the coaches poll. I also saw today, like, fourth in the preseason betting national favorite, you know, national championship odds. Like, they're in that conversation. What takes place on Saturday in front of a national audience will dictate some of what the discourse is around this team.
Let's dive into Oregon's offensive matchup with Boise State's defense. I think this is a game, Eric, where on paper, in theory, if Oregon plays the way that they should play, the way that we have talked about them all offseason, they've got the number one draft pick potentially in Dante Moore at quarterback. They've got maybe the best collection of receivers this program has ever seen. They've got a stud tight end that's a first-round projection in Jamari Johnson. They have one of the best offensive linemen in the country, and Iapani Lulu, a.k.a. Poncho at center, will be one of the best centers in college football. They've got a wide berth of talent along the offensive line that maybe is inexperienced in a game perspective, but from a talent perspective is loaded. If they do what they should do and what we think of them, this Boise, it really shouldn't matter what Boise State – puts on the field from a skill level standpoint. Boise State's going to be successful because of, if they are successful, it's going to be because of scheme and Oregon lack of execution. I look at this game as clean. If Oregon plays clean football, if Dante Moore protects the football and doesn't put the ball in jeopardy, is quick with his decisions, the offense operates efficiently, it's not really going to matter what Boise State does, because I think Oregon's offense over the course of 60 minutes will move the football consistently enough to put them in scoring position and to just score at a higher clip that Boise State can't match.
I have two real points of curiosity here for Oregon's offense against Boise's defense. And the first is Dante Moore related. And it was, I've been kind of waiting for the time to ask this question, and it kind of created itself on Monday when Dante spoke, but it was, or Tuesday, I should say, when he spoke, it was, how many copycat defenses are we going to see? How many teams are we going to see simulate a lot of what Indiana did and had success with, which really was changing the looks at the line of scrimmage? Like Dante would get the call from above. He'd take his, you know, he'd take his time to look and see what was being shown by the Hoosier defense. He'd find his points of emphasis. Okay, that's what they're in. And then right at the snap, they'd switch. And that threw him for a loop. It delayed his ability to make decisions because he had to look for other counters to be like, oh, actually they're in cover three, or they've changed what they were showing. There's a different blitz coming from a different point. And that really threw him for a loop. And we saw what that looked like both games. I mean, clearly his two worst performances of the season. Everybody knows that. I asked him about it. He said he spent the whole offseason working on it and anticipates teams maybe like the Broncos, who didn't do a lot of that a year ago, trying to kind of figure out ways to change his vision and what he's looking at out there. So I find that to be a real point of curiosity for me, is what kind of growth is there? Do we see Boise State try to mess with him a little bit pre-snap, give him things he's not prepared for, and then how does he react to it? Because I think that's still a big question mark, right? And because as you brought up, Matt, like if this is just line up and play the game and whatnot, like Oregon has massive advantages here, especially out at, on the outside at receiver. I think Boise State's secondary has some legitimate NFL talent. Oregon has a heap of it at every spot, right? On the outside at X, on the outside at Z, in the slot, at tight end, you know, coming out of the backfield with this dynamic athletes, like Oregon should have huge advantages if this is just line up and play the game. So is Dante able to do that? Or does Boise State find ways to kind of change what he's looking at, and how does that impact him? So that's number one. And then number two, Matt, is how do these tackles hold up?
Yeah.
Because that was the other thing that gave Dante trouble. You think about the Texas Tech game. I know statistically it was one of his better games, but
Isaiah World and Alex Harkey really struggled both games against Indiana. I mean, Harkey World couldn't even finish the game because he got hurt in the second one, and that matters. But they both struggled significantly.
And I didn't throw that Texas Tech game in there, and a bit of Penn State. I think they're better against Penn State, but Tech, I think that first couple drives, it was like, oh my gosh, like David Bailey's in the backfield all the time, and Dante's is not having the opportunity to process. So those are the two points of curiosity I have. And again, we don't know who's going to be out there. We expect Fox Crater at left tackle. I think right tackle is kind of more of a question.
Maybe up in the air.
Maybe Janoris Wilson's there. Could be Zaire Addison. Maybe Tommy Tofi is a name that, you know, is gaining some traction, you know, in the fandom right now. So there's a lack of clarity who's going to be there, but whoever it is needs to stack up, because Jaden Virgin Morgan is going to be, I don't know, one of the five or six best edge rushers Oregon probably plays all season. You know, BJ was saying earlier this week that he thinks that's probably the best NFL draft prospect on this team for the Broncos. So, like, that's a legitimate challenge to deal with, and it's going to be a first-time full-time starter, at least matching up against him for most of the afternoon. So I'm fascinated in those two, and those are primarily when Oregon is throwing the football, I guess. I think they're going to be able to run the ball really successfully in this game. I really do, and we'll talk about that more as we get into this, but those are the two things I'm really kind of dialed in on, is how is Dante handling it, and what does the offensive line look like?
And to your point about both those topics and key points, is Boise State's defense, that plays into what they like to do anyways, right? Like, historically, Boise State is a team that does a lot of line shifts right before the snap. They have a bunch of weird formations. They kind of bounce around a lot. And so that plays directly into their style of play, plays directly into what you're talking about. And so that's going to be a very good barometer check of where Oregon is at. And you're right. Like, that's for Dante Moore. That's why he came back to college. He came back to show to the NFL scouts, to show to himself, to A, also maximize his earnings from an NFL perspective of showing that he can perform at a high level against elite defenses and defenses that did what Indiana does. And he is right. You're right. It's a copycat league. We saw Oregon do it last year that when they implemented Dylan Thienemann into the program from the transfer portal, and they kind of made him that like hybrid safety linebacker that Caleb Downs at Ohio State was.
Exactly.
And that was so effective for Oregon. So, yes, just like the NFL is called a copycat league, college football is very much a copycat league. They don't hide it. They just straight steal it. They try and implement everything that other programs do. Oregon does it, and we anticipate, and you should anticipate, that Boise State does it as well. One thing that I am looking at, you touched on at the very end. I agree with you. Oregon State should run the Oregon should run the football incredibly well against Boise State. I would be really shocked if there's a push up front from Boise State's front seven that really hinders Oregon's ability from the start to the entire finish of the game to consistently run the football and get 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards per carry. I'd be really surprised if that's a struggle for Oregon. And if it is, Oregon's got some big problems at hand, because ultimately, as much as Dante Moore is kind of the focal point and what he can do with his arm, every championship team has to have an elite run game. And that's going to be the bread and butter for Dan Lanning the last couple of seasons. It's going to be the bread and butter probably this season. They've got two dynamic running backs that are studs there. And there's going to be an opportunity for them to really put up big numbers. And my question becomes, it's a weird dynamic of week one. We want to see these receivers. We want to see Jamari Johnson. We want to see the improvements from Dante Moore and what he can do from a throwing perspective. But in my eyes, from a game plan perspective, it might be a better case of just, I wish I had the hat, run the damn ball, right? Like just run the ball 40, 50 times in this game, ground and pound them, grind Boise State up, wear them down. And that's the matchup I'm going to be watching, of how frequently do they lean into this run game, and what, when they do throw, what are the kind of shots that they're taking? What are the throw dynamics? Is it a quick passing game? Do they try and take deep shots? Like the Will Stein era was feed the beast. Go out and try and take 8 to 10 vertical shots a game. Most games they did that. Does that continue under Drew Merringer as the new offensive coordinator who worked under Will Stein? Or is it, or what are the changes going to be? Do you do a quick pass game, but ultimately do you lean on the pass game more, or do you kind of follow what I think is going to be, regardless, the biggest strength of this team is its size and power and agility up front along the offensive line and your run game.
It's worth remembering that, you know, the dynamics previously with Will and Drew was Drew was in charge of the run game in terms of preparing the game plan. And so that's his background. Obviously he played quarterback, he coaches tight ends, so he's diverse background, but that was really where he was, you know, aiding, I guess, the offensive build that Will Stein put in a year ago. And so I anticipate, to your point, Matt, that's certainly not going to go away, and that's going to remain a priority. And, you know, I also think back to when Kenny Dillingham was here, and that was more of a run first offense than we saw the 3 years that Will was here. In 2024 was actually a really down rushing season, and then some of that explosiveness came back a year ago. I anticipate there being some real home run hitters in this offense from the backfield, especially. Like, we're going to get to some look aheads and some predictions later on in the show, but like D'Aaron Hill Jr. to me, I am maybe offensively the player I'm most excited to watch, just because of, you know, Dan Lanning yesterday even comes out and says he's a complete back now. You know, he's able to be on the field for every down. A year ago, he was a bit of a one trick pony. I mean, that's not totally fair, but it was, hey, when he's on the field, he's going to get the ball. He's probably going to be running off tackle, and he's just going to be using that speed to break away and create plays. And he broke a lot of big ones, right? I mean, he led the country in yards per carry average for running back. Last year, Oregon had twice as many runs of 20 or more yards than they did in 2024, and four times as many over 40. And D'Aaron was a big part of that. So some of that explosive run game, I'm curious to see. I think a lot of it will come from D'Aaron. If it doesn't work, Matt, and you said they're going to have bigger problems, I think we all know it's going to be O-line related. And
right.
I think it's hard not to feel a little concerned about what that's going to look like because of all the uncertainty. And especially because the last time these two teams met, this was the Charlie Pickard is playing center. The whole thing doesn't work. Dylan Gabriel has a really bad game. And just in general, it was just kind of a disaster up front. If that would be the case where this game ends up getting close, or the case where that run game doesn't pop. You know, Boise's able to throw enough weird looks at Dante where he has a hard time in the pass game. And this ends up being a lower scoring game where the Broncos are able to kind of keep it close and maybe push late in the game. That would be the path, I think. If we're trying to script out why this game is a little underwhelming, or Oregon doesn't cover, or however you want to look at it, I think that's probably the path. Is Oregon's offensive line has a really tough day. Boise State's a very veteran defensive line. It's not like Oregon where they brought back four, you know, early round NFL draft pick caliber players, but they've got talent there. And I do think Jaden Virgin Morgan will be one of the better edge players again that Oregon sees this year. They've got some talent at linebacker. That would be the case. It's like Oregon's O-line really struggles. Boise State's more athletic. They're able to fill the gaps and make the stops behind the line, and they just don't build the momentum, and they allow Boise State to hang around. So I'm with you that I feel really good about it, though. Like I think this should be a strength of this team, and if they're not able to flex week one against Boise, who they should be able to overpower up front based upon just the size matchups, that's going to be a real concern going into the road game in Stillwater the following week.
I think for me, the most important player, not most important, but the guy I'm excited to see, it's a two-part answer for me. Where the offensive line shakes out, I don't have doubts that the offensive line is going to be good. It's just who are the names, right? Mm-hmm. We know two or three of them. Who are they going to be the last two guys that kind of find their way into the starting lineup and are in the regular rotation? So that's kind of like my real answer. But if I had to pick one player that I'm really excited to just see play out and see his season, it's Evan Stewart. And yeah, it's the Evan Stewart story of missing all of last year, missing the Rose Bowl against Ohio State due to injury both times, two different injuries. They're not related. And it sounds like he's humbled. It sounds like he's all the way back. It sounds like he's a guy that's on a mission, that's committed to the team. And while he wasn't a bad teammate, he wasn't a guy that was all about himself, it just feels like he's even like doubled down or tripled down since that injury about, I don't care about my success, because I know that if I show up and I do my job, I'm going to have success and I'm going to do whatever is possible for the team. That paraphrasing basically what his message has been in the three times that he has spoken, it feels like, since the start of fall camp, throughout all of fall camp. This is a guy that's just loves the opportunity he has. And it's a cool story, right? Like, was a first round projection going into the 2024 season, suffered an injury, came back for 25, suffered an injury before the year even started, missed all of 25. And can he get himself back to that level? I think he can. Maybe not a first round pick, but I think there's going to be an opportunity where he sees his NFL stock skyrocket. And so not just the aspect of his return, but how do they implement him with DeCorian Moore? How do they implement him with Jeremiah McClellan? Because remember, this time last year, before we knew Evan Stewart was hurt, it was the question was, oh, so excited to see DeCorian Moore and Evan Stewart paired together. What's that going to look like? So now we get that answer. And then in Stewart's absence last season, among other receivers that got hurt and opportunities that presented itself, Jeremiah McClellan elevated himself to now where there's a very realistic chance that he could be wide receiver one this season for Oregon in 2026. I don't think he's the likely candidate, but he's in the discussion at least. And so how do they kind of fuse those three guys together? So for me, it's Evan Stewart and just the usage point that he has.
And we should note, Evan Stewart last time against Boise, 5 catches, 112 yards, had a 67-yard touchdown in that game.
And he's pretty good, right?
He's pretty good, but like, this is a matchup that was favorable last time. Obviously, the personnel is totally different, so like, he can't sit here and say, like, oh, he's going to do it again. But wasn't too bad 2 years ago when he played against this team. Let's see if he's able to do it again. Should we switch over to when Boise's on offense?
Yeah, let's flip the sides now. Oregon's defensively, this is we've talked about it at length here, right? It feels like every time we've done a podcast, every time you and I have talked to somebody, whether it's in the media or outside of the program or a fan, everyone gravitates to the defense and everyone gravitates to the front four and their decision to all return. It's the first time in a long time, maybe if ever, Eric, where Oregon has had a defensive line where you say, yeah, all four of those guys are NFL dudes. And I think there's been a couple years where they've had three. I think 2012, they had Buckner, Armstead, and Deion Jordan. And all three of those guys ended up being first-round draft picks. But to me, it's they've now got four of them. And there's probably a real realistic chance that all four of them are first or second round draft picks, maybe third.
Yeah, in that conversation for sure. And this is where, you know, one thing to note with Boise State is they're going with the younger center here. They're going with his name is Stuart Talfa. So second year player out of actually the same high school Douglas Utu went to, Bishop Gorman down in Las Vegas, one of the powerhouses out west here. He's starting for the first time. And you just think about what that could be like if Bear and Amari, and we'll see with Amari, by the way, I don't want to like make this bigger than it is, what his availability is. We know he was dealing
with. He did miss some practice.
We know he missed some practice. It's been a while since we've had any sort of sense of that. So I don't know if he's limited or full go or what his availability, if he doesn't play, et cetera. But just imagine your first start as a college center is against the number two team in the country, and you're looking against these two guys, especially if Amari is available and plays a big role in this game. These are, I mean, Amari might be the best athlete of a 330-pound person Oregon's ever had. It probably is, right, in terms of just the way he gets off the snap. Imagine that sort of a person coming at you and what that could do in terms of rushing the snap. So, like, even that component before the ball gets to Maddox Mattson, it you know, in theory, benefits and is on Oregon's favor. So that's a point of contention I have, or a point of interest I have. And then I was just crunching the numbers because when we had BJ on yesterday to talk about this matchup, he mentioned Maddox Mattson's struggles in the four previous games against Power Four teams that he's had. And I don't know if he did it justice or if I didn't listen well enough, but here's what it is. Against Oregon, 17 of 40 for 148 and a touchdown. That doesn't sound very good. That's his best game probably. Okay. Penn State, he threw for 304 yards. He also had three interceptions. Notre Dame, four interceptions. Washington, he was 7 of 16, two interceptions. Since that Oregon game, he's had one touchdown and nine interceptions against Power Four defenses. So that doesn't mean it's going to be entirely predictive of what happens on Saturday. He's a senior. He's had time to get better. Just like we mentioned, we think Dante's going to step this up, take a step this offseason and some things.
He's working hard too behind the scenes.
Exactly. I'm sure Maddox is going to be better now than he was the last time people saw him. But historically, at least, it suggests, based upon past performance, this is not somebody who's thrived in moments like these. They've lost all four of those games. Most of them, actually the Oregon game being really the only one that was remotely competitive for four quarters. I know the Penn State game, it was kind of a cool story for a while, but the Nittany Lions eventually pulled away in that one. I'm really curious to see, does he look any better? And if he doesn't, and he's who he's been his whole career, Boise State needs to be able to run the ball down Oregon's throat basically the whole game. And I think that's going to be a real challenge based upon the conversation we just had about the way Oregon's defensive line is presenting, right? Like, this should be a defensive line that dominates games. Boise State has two really good running backs. We're going to talk about
that. Yeah, they have two stud running backs. I don't think they're good. I think both these guys could probably play at Oregon if they were on Oregon's roster.
And I, as I wrote yesterday in a kind of a preview item, five things I'm looking at going into this game. This might be the best running back duo Oregon faces until Ohio State in November, where they go against Bo Jackson and Isaiah West. So that's a focal point. We'll talk more about those running backs in a second. But if Oregon can shut down that run game, or at least limit it where it doesn't, you know, take over and allow them to have extended drives, I'm not sold that Mattson can win them this game. I don't think he's built to do that. And this is a totally rebuilt receiving room where they've got a slot receiver in Ben Ford, who was going to be a star player. I read this. This is kind of wild. Matt tore his ACL three times in the last 6 years. So he's poor kid. Yeah. Like, seriously. And he's hopefully able to be available in this game. But if he's not, it's going to be transfers and then actually a true freshman named Rashawn Jones, who grew up in Baker, Oregon, Eastern Oregon, a small little town out there, and then ended up transferring to Idaho, I think, for his senior year high school. Yeah. And so that's the kind of talent they have at receiver. So I'm not convinced they're going to be able to throw the ball effectively based upon all that. They need to be able to run the ball. And if Oregon can take that away, like that's the number one key for this defense to me is if Oregon can take away the run game with Dylan Riley and Sire Gaines, which won't be an easy task necessarily. I don't see how this game is competitive for very long.
Rashawn Jones is kind of like their big name during fall camp on the offense side of the football. True freshman showed up and has found his way probably into the starting lineup. And is he going to be a guy that's going to give Oregon a bunch of problems? Probably not, but he does have some really impressive physical attributes. He runs track at a high level at the state of Oregon. If I remember correctly, he was competing as a true freshman, or not as a true freshman, but as a high school freshman in the state championships at track and field at Oregon for all three of his years that he spent time. So he's a very fast dude. He's got size. It's just like the classic, like Boise State, they find a diamond in the rough, they develop, and it just sounds like that's happening a little bit sooner. But he's probably going to be the deep threat, the vertical threat that Oregon's going to have to contend with. Is it going to give them hiccups? Probably not. And if it does, again, Oregon's got bigger problems on their hands. I think, to your point, though, I think Boise State's running backs are two dudes. They're studs. They could play on this team for Oregon. Would they be starters? Probably not. Maybe one of them. It would be a tough debate. I would lean Oregon's side for sure. But they would find their way into the rotation. They would crack. They would force their way onto the field. My concern with Boise State, from their perspective, is going to be, can their offensive line hold up well enough to let their running backs run the football effectively? And I think that's where, if Boise State's going to be able to move the football on Oregon, that's where they have to be able to scheme and physically win battles. And they've got to be able to effectively create holes. I don't think they're going to be able to do that on a consistent basis. I think this game's going to be won in the trenches of Oregon's defense. I think the talent that Oregon has, the depth that Oregon has, and the athleticism that they have up front is going to allow them to kind of control the line of scrimmage where they don't need to load the box a ton. And then it creates one-on-one matchups and Maddox Mastin. Can you just make throws? I think they're going to be able to disguise. They're going to be able to throw a bunch of different defenses. They can bring pressure. They can simulate pressure. They can drop everybody back because they can basically essentially, I think their game plan is going to have the full arsenal of what they want to do and can do because of the play that they have up front. I think Oregon's front four guys are going to be so good that all options are going to be available for this defense.
Well, I was just thinking of this. We talked about Rashawn Jones as this dynamic freshman. Imagine if Gatlin Bear had signed there and he was making his debut here as a former five-star. How that would sort of change the discussion. And the irony is, of course, he's maybe Oregon's fourth or fifth receiver right now, and maybe even lower on the depth chart. It's kind of hard to say without seeing how they play on Saturday or kind of where this is at. But you mentioned Jones being a dynamic player. Gatlin Bear is significantly more of a burner, got way better speed than anybody probably on the field on either team, maybe at 10, 100 meters. And that's flying, absolutely. And that is, if he focused on track, he could maybe do that professionally with that kind of speed. So that kind of stands out to me as well. And I guess just kind of the last thing I'll throw it here on defense, and maybe we can jump into predictions after this, Matt, unless you got a little bit more. This offensive line for Boise State, I mentioned the center. They're breaking in quite a few new players here. They lost a couple of their better offensive linemen. It's kind of a similar case with Oregon, right? Like, it would be one thing, I think, for Boise, you know, if they're going to really have a successful day, if they had a veteran line to at least stand up. Like, it's another thing when you're going against maybe the best defensive front in the country and you're breaking in multiple first-time starters or younger players, at least, who haven't done this on a regular basis. Like, that really tips in Oregon's favor pretty significantly to me. And so I'm really struggling to see where Boise State ends up having success to really move the ball consistently in this game, unless, and this would be the one I would point out, is like Dylan Riley ran, this is one of their running backs, he ran like a 10-6 and 100 in high school. He gets on the outside. His nickname is Jet. He's extremely explosive. if he's able to like turn the corner and break off a couple big runs, maybe that changes this game. You see this all the time in football. Like a defense is dominant, but the other team just happens, and not like it's luck, but just hits a couple of big plays, has a couple 50-yard chunk plays that totally change the game. To me, that's the path for Boise State. I think on a down-by-down basis, Oregon should have an advantage. But like if a Riley can break off a long one, you mentioned Rashawn Jones' speed. I would be very concerned, frankly, if Brandon Finney or Ifeo Badegu or Naeem Offord is getting roasted by a true freshman from Baker, Oregon originally. Yes. That doesn't seem like
major
a
major concern.
Outcome. But if that's the case and like he gets over the top and catches a 50-yard pass or something like that, that sort of changes the dynamic. Like I think Boise State needs to have, maybe to even really be really competitive, 2 to 4 real explosive plays here to change the dynamics. Because I really think like if Oregon is able to just avoid that, I don't see Boise State successfully maneuvering down the field with 14, 15 play drives, at least not with the defense we're being sold that Oregon has.
100%. I agree that if Oregon's defense is what we've been told to expect, or what we should expect, what we think we should expect, Boise State's going to stay in this game because of quick shots, big explosion plays, missed tackle that in a one-on-one situation that allows a guy to run away from the defense because he's the only guy out there. There's going to be major problems if what you said of 14 play drives, 10 play drives, where they go the length of the football field methodically, that's going to be a big concern for Oregon moving forward. So, all right, let's transition over to predictions now. We're going to change things up here. We used to do prop bets. We're going to change it up this year. We're going to pick an offensive MVP. We're going to pick a defensive MVP, and then we'll go into our score predictions.
And really quick, Matt, we've got a decent number of people in the chat here. If you guys want to toss out your offensive MVP, your defensive MVP score predictions you guys have, maybe we can discuss that after we give ours and kind of run through all that, just to be a little bit interactive with the listeners. If you guys have takes you want to send up here, we can react to them.
Yep. Go ahead. Drop in your offensive MVP, defensive MVP predictions for the guys that you think will stand out for the Ducks. I'll go first, Eric. Offense. You can go offense, transition into defense, and I'll close up with defense.
Sure.
Offensively, the guy that I'm anticipating going to be the MVP is going to be Jordan Davison. I think Oregon star running back. I think he's going to be having a big day, multi-touchdown performance. I think he's going to go over 100 yards. The question for me becomes just how frequently is he used? How long does he stay in the game? I do think this game goes in a direction where at some point backups will be thrown into the contest at some point. So I'm going with Jordan Davison. I just think the bread and butter of Oregon football, of championship football, is a run game. He's your starting running back. He's your best guy. We'll see where that goes from there. So I think he's going to be the stud for this team.
I want to pick De'Ara Hill Jr. just because I think he's going to have a big day, but I'm going to pick Dante. I know it's a kind of a cop-out easy answer, but again, I'm coming into this game with like two concerns, and they're both basically pass game related. And if this offense is to be what we think it's going to be, we need to see Dante thrive in a matchup like this. And again, I'm with you. It's possible he only plays 3 quarters. And so, you know, this is we're kind of doing the prop bets versus the MVP made more sense, because in the game like this, it's like if he throws for 250 yards, completes 75% of his passes for 3 touchdowns and no interceptions, are we going to say it's a bad day? Well, it's maybe not a Heisman day, but, you know, if he only played a certain number of drives, it kind of limits the opportunity. I think we're going to come out feeling really good about where Dante's at, you know. And again, I think that if the inverse is true and we're coming out going like, it kind of looks similar to what we saw last year. He did make a couple mistakes. He threw a couple interceptions, like was struggling to kind of see the field, was maybe a step slow in reacting to some of the pressure. Like, this is concerning. We're going to be having a very different perspective on this season. It won't be like if the season's over, because we can all remember in 2024. Let's use that as a good example of, hey, that Boise State game, that Idaho game, those were competitive games. But what transpired was 13-0 to start the season, number one team in the country going into the playoff. We know what happens at the end, but no one here should be complaining about a 13-0 start to a season in a Big Ten championship in your first year in the conference, where you beat, you know, the Buckeyes, the Wolverines, and the Nittany Lions in the same season. That I think had been done like 3 times in conference history prior to that or something. It was like Iowa and Michigan State had done it. So there's a possibility Dante doesn't look great right off the bat, and it doesn't mean anything long-term, but I'm anticipating it's going to be a really good day for Dante. All right, defensively, I always like to kind of tie in a little bit of the flavor of the week. And for me, I'll just point out, I think Tatum Tuioti, I know his brother's not on the other team, or not other on the other side of the ball. Like, he's not going to be playing offense with him. He plays defense. He's a linebacker, Mana Tuioti. I think there's just going to be a little bit of that sibling rivalry that brings something out of him. And I'm anticipating he has a big day. You know, we mentioned some of the issues we think Oregon's defensive line can present Boise State. I'm anticipating it's going to come off the edge too. Like, as much as I brought up, like, it's going to be a young center for Boise State. He's going to be matching up against a bunch of 320-pound, really athletic defensive linemen, including some backups. We're really excited to see. I think off the edge, they're going to have a big advantage. I'm anticipating Tatum starts his 2026 season kind of where he left off in 2025. Where I think up until the Indiana game, he had a tackle for loss in every game of the season, get almost 10 sacks. Like, I think he's going to be really involved. So I'll pick Tatum as my defensive MVP.
I like that pick. And I think his story arc is pretty awesome to watch. Remember, he was a three-star, 215-pound edge that showed up to Oregon as a freshman in 2023. And now he's a guy that's going to be a straight-up NFL dude at like 270 pounds. He's really, truly grown with the program and his representation of how far they've come. So I like that pick. I'm going to go linebacker Jerry Mixon. I really thought about picking Devin Jackson, but I think Jerry's the leader of this group, right? And he's the guy that gets everyone kind of in spots. He's the experienced linebacker. I think he kind of got overshadowed a little bit, and understandably so, by Bryce Betcher last season. But what Jerry can do. So I'm going Jerry. I think his play in the run game is going to be important. I also think he has a good knack of finding the football in the passing game and reading quarterbacks and knowing that Maddox Maxson struggles against higher level competition like Oregon. I think there's going to be an opportunity or two for Jerry Mixon to get his mitts on the ball. Does that mean he pulls an interception? I don't know. I think there's a good chance, but I think he's going to maybe have an opportunity to knock a ball down, bat a ball, tip a pass, whatever, get his mitts on the ball, create some havoc. And then I think he's just going to clean up on the tackles because of how good the front four is for Oregon. The lanes are going to be there from a tackle standpoint. So I'm going to run with Jerry Mixon.
Before we go to predictions, we did see this here from Noel Forms, who asked if Jordan Davison's good to go. I don't know what radio show he was listening to, but it said he was out 4 weeks. I'm guessing that may be something to do with a report that we were involved with, along with Zach Neal, about his injury that was ended up being, redacted. We pulled back on that one because we got better information. So I haven't heard he's going to miss 4 to 4 weeks. Could he be like, I don't even think he's limited, because I think what happened is he dealt with the stinger that they feared was a re-aggravation of that injury, and ultimately they got better information from the medical results. That so I know I think he's available on Saturday, and if he's not, that's going to be a concern. And one last
thing
I'll share,
a huge topic,
and one last thing I'll share here is there's no availability reports due in non-conference play now, so there's nothing from the school, so the reporters are going to have to do their due diligence to confirm who's available and not available. So just be aware of that. If you're tracking health of players, it's going to be coming out a little bit differently in the past, where it, you know, it used to be 2 hours before kickoff, or that is the case in conference games. It'll be 2 hours before kickoffs. You'll get some information. You'll actually start getting stuff Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, leading up to conference games. Nothing this week. So just be aware of that. Information might be coming out a little more slowly, a little bit more organically than it would in the past with regard to injuries.
Okay, score predictions here. The spread's 24.5. That's a really high number. The question becomes then for me, does Oregon score in the 40s, or does their defense play at such a high clip that they keep Boise in really low digit numbers, single digit numbers? I don't think that's going to happen. I think Boise State's going to score, probably because I think some of the time and place score situations will allow some backups to get into this game. I'm all in on Oregon's offense being straight up lethal. Run game, pass game, everything. I think they're going to also be clicking kind of a not full midseason form, but I think we're going to be one of the things we're going to walk away with Oregon's offense is, yeah, that's a team that's got a multi-year starter back and a guy that's played a lot of football back with a lot of skill weapons around him. That's going to be one of the narratives around the offense is they're further along just because of the talent and the experience they have at their skill positions. So I think Oregon's going to win this game. I actually think they're going to cover too, which that part for me is a little wakey here, but I'm going to go Oregon 44, Boise State 17. I think this game's probably more like a 37-7 game going into the fourth quarter where it's very clear Oregon's won this contest. They've kind of put the foot on the throat for Boise State. They pull the backups. Boise State tacks on a couple touchdowns late to make the score a little bit more respectable, but they still cover the spread, 44-17 Oregon.
Yeah, the odds makers here have set this 24.5, but the over-under is 51.5. And so if you kind of math that out, they're predicting like a 38-14 game. And frankly, that sounds kind of right to me, that sort of a score in terms of how I'm thinking about this. I think I'm going to pick Oregon to win 39-14, so I'm on the right side of the cover, Matt. So maybe they go for two at some point and get it. I guess I could get I don't even know. You have to math a lot here to figure out how they get to 39. Right. But they're going to get – I want to predict a cover, and I also think it's pretty close to what Vegas has set the line at. I think 38-14 feels pretty appropriate to me in terms of where I think these teams are going to be at. I think the Broncos are going to have some success offensively. They have enough good players to do that. Defensively, I don't know if the Broncos have much of a shot to slow Oregon down when Oregon has the ball. And really, if they don't, we're going to be up here talking a lot about what went wrong offensively. Like, Matt, if this game is 28-17,
that's Oregon a concern.
Oregon fans are going to be really concerned, and I think we'll be concerned, frankly, if they only get four touchdowns out of this game. You know, with what's being built here, and here's the other part of that's kind of the elephant in the room here. There's a lot of hype right now. We know this roster is really talented. Matt and I are just like everybody else that's listening to this podcast. We haven't seen these guys since April. The coaching staff is very high on this team. It's clear based upon what they say overtly. It's pretty clear on how they say it. They think they've got a really talented roster, and the team is speaking in the terms of making history. And we know what that means for this program, right? Like if you created a list of things that a college football program wants to achieve, Oregon's checked every box save one. And so we know what they want this season. They want to win a national championship. They want to make that history. If they start this season, again, with all this hype, and the game ends up being another, Boise kind of hung around, and that was interesting. It plays out maybe like what BJ was saying is best case for the Broncos and their fan base, where it's a little closer. We're going to have some conversations probably in the days following that are concerning. I think nationally there'll be a bit of, maybe Boise's better than we thought, but maybe Oregon's not quite as good as people thought. And again, that doesn't mean anything big picture, because I'll point to 2024 and how that played out. Again, but at the same time, you'd really like to see them come out here and put a foot down and make a statement and prove that they really, really are validating that preseason ranking.
This message from KMCB12 is spot on. Like, this early in the game, the backdoor covers are always incredibly hard to worry about. I agree with that. I think Oregon – early in the season, it's hard to play against a solid team like this a full 60 minutes. Like, we always talk about, like, when we meet with Dan Lanning post game the first month of every season, he's always like, we played really good football for 18 minutes today. You know, now our job is, can we figure out how to get that number to 60? Where do we go? How do we get to that number? And so I just think Oregon's not going to play a complete game. They're not going. He's going to come back and say, there was a period in the second half where we kind of let up. But I think Oregon is at a position now, unlike any other team before this, where they are significantly better in talent composition than basically anyone that they will face on this roster or on this schedule this season, outside of Ohio State. And Oregon has a better roster than Ohio State does, according to the blue chip ratio on 24/7 Sports. And so I'm banking on just the sheer talent gap that Oregon's going to have over most of these teams, that even though they don't play a full clean 60 minutes of good football, it's still going to be good enough to expand the lead pretty quickly. And that's why I think they cover.
What do you think about this? This is from Double O'Neill. Ducks should win, but don't cover. And he corrected this in another message. There's a chance, there's a small chance they lose again. I would be absolutely flummoxed if this team starts 0-1. Yeah. That would be raised, you know, that would be raise the alarms to mock whatever.
It'd be a six alarm fire, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Firehouse you have in town, come to Austin Stadium.
And I would be really concerned because I think Maddox Madsen, I think as the season goes on, we're gonna look back and say he might have been like the 10th best quarterback they play.
Yeah.
Like genuinely, like the next week against Oklahoma State, they brought over a quarterback from Oklahoma State from North Texas, who was like the leading passer in the country. They played Jaden Maiava later at USC. You look at who they face in the month of November, and even in October, you know, Aiden Childs is on the schedule. I don't know if we still think he's good or not, but like that was a former 5-star transfer a couple of years ago. He's now at Northwestern. Like there's a lot of quarterback. Julian Sain obviously speaks for himself. Bryce Underwood speaks for himself. Even Damon Williams is a really capable quarterback who Oregon's handled pretty well, but he's a talented player. Illinois' quarterback is a big time transfer. So like, there's some really good quarterbacks Oregon's playing, and if this is the game that they struggle and lose, we'll see. I don't know. That's going to be like, to me, and not that it all boils down to quarterback play, but this team to me doesn't have the quarterback good enough to beat Oregon.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on this Odds and Audibles podcast. Next time you hear from us is going to be live from the Autzen Stadium press box post game. We'll have a show. We'll do it live as well there. So make sure to hit the bell and whistle to get notifications for whenever we go live. Subscribe to the channel as well. And real quick, for our listeners of this show, whether you're on YouTube or you're on podcasts, thank you for watching and listening wherever you get your podcasts. And for fans of the show, we've got a special treat. Use the promo code DUCK60 on the bottom of your screen to get 60% off an annual subscription to DuckTerritory.com, where you can get the latest recruiting rankings and news, transfer portal updates, and wall-to-wall coverage of Oregon athletics right here on the Odds and Audibles podcast, which is part of DuckTerritory.com. So until the next show, which will be Saturday night from Austin Stadium, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.